Welcome to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. My name is Matt Lusty from the Hinckley Institute of Politics. I'm filling for Natalie Gochner this week in the political middle. We have some new voices with us in the studio on the political right. Filling in for Representative Dan McKay, we have Natalie Callahan, who is vice chair of the Utah Young Republicans. And on the political left, filling in for Senator Jim DeBacchus is Lorcan Murphy, president of the Young Democrats of Utah. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you very much, Matt.
So we've got a lot of things to talk about, and we're going to start out kind of on the national stage. And one figure who is looming large on the national stage right now, right in the middle of things, is Utah Senator Mike Lee. Now, he has said he will not vote for the Senate bill that the Republicans have put forward to change the Affordable Care Act unless some things happen. First, he wants insurance companies to have more flexibility in offering cheaper and less comprehensive plans, or count his vote as a no. And without that change, it's not very likely to pass. So we're going to start, what do we do to make sense of this, with Lorcan. Is Senator Lee an obstructionist? I mean, he's been called an obstructionist in the past. What's your view as a Democrat?
I think that's exactly what you want with your healthcare. Less comprehensive coverage. I think the current healthcare bill as it stands, I mean, it's going to be taking coverage away from 22 million Americans, really messing with people's healthcare, and not a huge fan of it. So I think with a bill like this, we need as much obstruction as possible. I think that we really need to be making sure that we have Medicare for All for folks.
So he is an obstructionist, but this is a good obstruction. I can see Natalie just steaming over there. Natalie, what are you going to say about this? Jump on in.
Not steaming. I think Lorcan and I come from different places on this. So I will say, you're right, Department of Health and Human Services, they said around 20 million people are covered by the Affordable Care Act. Mm-hmm. The frustrating thing is Republicans have had 8 years to come up with a plan and they didn't do it. I'll give you on that point. However, as far as Mike Lee being an obstructionist, I believe, and you know, there was a great poll, it's called Growing Up GOP, and they asked millennials, young people our age, what do you care most about? And they said freedom. The problem is that hasn't been quite defined yet. What does that freedom mean to us? To me, it means having options and not having the government in the way of choosing what your healthcare looks like. So I understand the need for that. There's people around the country that need help and they need health insurance. And I understand that and I am supportive of that. But as a millennial who doesn't go to the doctors all the time, I would like to choose a healthcare plan that has less coverage, that has lower deductibles and a lower payment, and not worry about the government getting in the way and mandating and regulating what I have to pay for my healthcare.
So that's I like the idea of freedom, right? Because Lorcan's saying freedom means free healthcare, right? And Natalie's saying it's free choices. You know, really for me, I asked about Senator Lee being an obstructionist. I just want to point this out there. The main difference last time when he was being called that is he was getting in the way of maybe the Democrats, right? Mm-hmm. But this time it's his own party. So to me, that says principled. I'm not sure if everyone agrees with that. But what I would say, getting back to healthcare, is why can't we cut out the explosiveness, right? This is coming from the moderate middle, but we know what people want. We've surveyed about this. People want to be able to get healthcare without having issues with pre-existing conditions. Mm-hmm. They want to be able to do something that doesn't hurt companies and actually helps our economy. Can't we all just get along? That's the moderate middle talking. Okay, but I want to move on. I want to talk about Bears Ears because the comment period on Bears Ears National Monument closes after more than 400,000 comments were posted. And Interior Secretary Ryan Zeke is recommending to shrink the monument. What do we think? I'm going to start with you this time, Natalie, because we went to you second last time. You're up.
Thanks, Matt. I'm passionate about this topic, actually. I work with San Juan County, and I had worked with conservative organizations about what this land issue means, specifically to Utahans. 400,000 comments, it's quite a lot. You wonder, in part, where are they coming from? This land, up until January, had been in San Juan County with some regulation and some protections, but not the extent that it is now. The argument I hear from the left most often is, well, if we take away these protections, they're going to put oil rigs and they're going to do all of these things to hurt the land. My question has always been, why didn't they do that in December? And so, look, I think that people need to maybe look at a map. Maybe they need to visit San Juan County and see what's actually there. 1.3 million acres is a lot bigger than I think some people understand. It's bigger than two states in our country.
That's a lot of oil we're missing out on, right?
They have actually done a lot of studies. The oil isn't there.
Oh, no.
And so it puts a little bit of a damper on the argument that a lot of people have put out. And it's just, to be honest, it's fake news.
Fake news. Some great thought.
Hashtag
fake news. All right, we're going to go to Lorcan. Lorcan, your thoughts.
So bear's ears, that's definitely, I think it's a national monument. I think trying to go back and shrink or undo its status as a national monument is trying to put a toothpaste back in the bottle. And like, I think that this is like, public lands are a really big issue for Utahns. I mean, these are lands that like we grow up on, that we camp on, that we learn to hunt on. And of course, with bear's ears in particular, this is a huge issue for native rights. It's been made a national monument, and I think 400,000 public comments. I mean, like, the question is, does public opinion matter in this case? I think this is indicative of a bigger problem with this kind of like a current Republican Party that is opposed, you know, big government and things like that, and supposed to be responsive and of the people. But I mean, I feel like you said yourself, we've done a lot of studies. We know how people feel about this, but they're going against what people think anyhow.
You know what, Lorcan, I'm glad you brought that up, because that is one of the questions here is, does it even matter, right? You had lots of people commenting before, you know, before the change in administration, don't put this up as a monument. Now you have lots of people saying, shrink this monument. I mean, does it matter? I can see, here we go. We're going to go over to Natalie. She wants to say something.
Look, two things. First of all, does it matter? Well, does it matter that the Native American tribe, that is the only full Utah Native Navajo tribe, voted to rescind Bear's Ears Monument? Does that matter to the president? I think it should. Also, as far as putting toothpaste back in a bottle, there's precedence for shrinking monuments. In fact, many presidents have shrunk the monuments. My question is, if you want to really take it to the people, why not have Congress approve these national monuments and let them be held accountable to the voters? That doesn't exist right now. I think it should. I think the voices of the people that do matter, but should it be everybody, or should it be the people that live there and have to deal with the regulation? I think that's maybe the difference.
I want to know what kind of toothpaste we're talking about, but let's go to Lorcan really quickly. We're going to give you a minute to rebut on that, and then I've got some things to say about bear's ears.
Yeah, as someone that's worked really closely with some of the tribal communities, I know that that was a very contentious vote where there were a lot of people that went against the will of the tribes themselves, that were just higher up officials that voted against the will of the people that actually are close to this issue. And I think... Sorry, I forgot what I was going to say.
Well, no, I appreciate the fact that you had some experience with it. The comment I wanted to give about bear's ears is that, you know, if you look at what percentage of the state is owned by the federal government and you compare it with other states, we're actually the second most owned state.
Huh.
64.9%. That's crazy to me. But that being said, there is a need to really protect these incredible places. Now, some people could say, wow, that's way too much that the federal government owns of Utah. But you could also say, well, Utah's a stunning place. Of course we want to protect this. I mean, we have all these national parks, right? So you see both sides of that argument. But what I would say is this, is why can't we protect those places but also balance the interest of the majority of Utahns? You know, I look at decisions like what happened with the outdoor retailers. I'm looking at you, Colorado, and I hope you're hearing this. Is what, you know, we look at decisions like that and we say the state, the people that live, work, and recreate here don't want that to happen. But at the same time, they do want to be able to go and visit those places. Once again, can't we all just get along? This is a repeating remark. I'm going to give you guys 30 seconds, well, maybe 15 seconds remark on this, and then we're going to take a quick break. Natalie?
Look, this is about this people. It's about a diverse economy. It's about a diverse recreation area. And it's also about protecting the religious freedoms of the Native American people. The monument has seriously hurt that. It's time to take that back. And I really hope that President Trump listens to Zinke's recommendation in making the monument smaller.
Lorcan, 15 seconds.
Okay, I think that public lands are really important. They protect Utah's heritage. And I think that the issue with the tribes, I mean, if you've seen the enormous protests, I think protecting their religious freedom is something that is in the interest for keeping the monument the size it currently is.
All right, fantastic. Well, stay with us, listeners, because we have some important things to talk about on a more local level. When we come back, we're going to talk about the 3rd District race, homelessness, UTA, and a few other things. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For podcasts of more local shows and lectures, follow us on iTunes or visit the Local Shows tab at kcpw.org.
I'm Natalie Callahan on the right side of politics.
I'm Lorcan Murphy on the Democratic side of politics.
And my name is Matt Lusty, and I'm the moderate middle. And we talked about some great things before the break, some more national issues, so we're going to bring things a little bit more local. We're going to start with the 3rd District race. There was a debate recently in which we heard from the GOP side. Kathy Allen was not there, but she's going right to November. I'm losing my words, but I'm telling you, she's going to be there in the general election.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to get kind of a feeling, because we have a younger group here. This is a very millennial panel, and I want to talk about kind of the options we have and how we feel about them. And we're going to start with you, Lorcan. Who do young voters want to see representing Utah? And specifically, who do young voters in the 3rd District want to see representing Utah?
Young voters overwhelmingly do care about their healthcare and health insurance issues. I think a lot of us more and more are being more entrepreneurial, doing a lot of freelance work, and having to be tied down to an employer to be able to afford your healthcare so you don't die is definitely something that's close to a lot of our hearts. So we want somebody that's going to stand up and fight for our healthcare issues. So, and I think that's why young folks are going to be supporting Dr. Allen. She's an incredible doctor, and she's done a lot of great work supporting healthcare initiatives and things like that. So I think she's where my money's going.
Okay, I've got some questions about Dr. Allen and her viability in this race. But first, we're going to go to Natalie, and she has to tell us who she's going to pick. Okay, you don't have to tell us that. But tell us about these candidates and what you saw in the debate the other night.
Look, Lorcan, first of all, let me say thank you for giving me great talking points tonight. I actually am an entrepreneur. I'm a business owner, which... You know, it's a very unique situation to be in as a millennial. You have to figure out a lot of things quickly. And one of those things is healthcare. And so it's part of the reason I am against a lot of the government-funded healthcare and pro the free market taking into action. So thanks for bringing that up. I think we do care about it. Second, I think the biggest issue that our generation should be looking at is the economy. We have a $21 trillion debt. The question is, and has always been, who's going to pay it off? It seems like it won't be our parents or grandparents who are currently in power. So that lies onto us. How we're going to do that, I think that Republicans are on the right side of this argument if they could stick to their conservative values. And we will have a Republican Congress.
That's who's going to win. Dr. Allen's not going to win in November. Is that what you're saying?
It is. It's going to be one of our Republicans. And as far as who it's going to be and who millennials are going to support, I don't know. One of the things I love about the Republican Party is the diversity within it and the diversity of thought. And so I can't speak for all millennial Republicans and tell you who they're going to support. I think each candidate has some strengths. Each candidate has their own set of weaknesses, and I'll be interested to see who they support.
Okay, so stay with me here, Natalie, because you said you're not sure who to support. But I have some research, some survey research telling you who's in the lead, and I want to see if you agree with it. So Utah Policy recently did a survey through Dan Jones and Associates, and they say that 29% of Republicans in this district are voting for Provo Mayor John Curtis in the primary coming up, with 12% for Chris Herod and 10% for Tanner Range. Now, those figures come before the debate happened. Mm-hmm. Did that even change? And the other thing about this is Democrat Kathy Allen has $700,000 sitting in the bank.
Mm-hmm.
So what's happening?
So first of all, I'll comment on the polls. I have such a hard time with polling, specifically from companies like Dan Jones and Associates, not because I think that they're not working hard. It's because there are specific laws that mean that they have to pull people on a landline. So question, who's answering their phone and answering the polls? Not our generation, number one. Number two, the 3rd District is diverse. You have Provo. You also have San Juan County. I don't know who that represents. John Tanner is a good man. I know him. I like him. But the other two candidates also, like I said, have some great qualities. As far as $700,000 in the bank, I think there's an argument to be made that money doesn't always win elections. We can look to Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump on that. And so sometimes it's just you have to give the people who are going to vote for who they want.
So are you telling me that the people answering their phone on the landlines, the majority say they're going to vote for skinny jeans and John Curtis?
John Curtis is a sexy candidate in a lot of ways. I'm not surprised. But, honestly, we're far away from the primary election. We're 2 months away. People still really aren't thinking about it, to be honest with you. There's going to be a lot of ground game that's going on between now and August 15th. Vote-by-mail ballots go out on July 24th. There's a lot that can happen, and it's going to be an interesting race.
That's a fair point. Okay, let's go over to you, Lorcan. We just heard that $700,000 does not matter. In fact, the Donald Trump phrase got brought up, referring to Hillary Clinton. So what are your thoughts on
that? Does
that
lurking?
Does that matter?
No, hey, well, I don't know. Maybe we'll have some help from Russia or something like that. I mean, you don't need money. No, it's not fake. They just confirmed it yesterday. Come on, man. Okay, wait. Let's get back to CD3.
$700,000.
$700,000. That's interesting. I love that. I mean, like, you got dollar bills, y'all. So, Kathy Allen, I mean, there was the original comment that she made when Jason Chaffetz was saying, oh, sell your, like, $600 smartphone. That will pay for your, like, thousands and thousands of dollars of medical bills. And then she got that first $300,000 after he dropped out. People were concerned. They were saying, like, you know, can she stand on her own as a candidate? And now, since then, she has doubled the amount of money that she's gotten in, the amount of donations that she's got. So I think that $700,000 is going to take us a really long way.
This is going to be fun to watch. I'm going to give you a closing 10 seconds, so we're going to move on this issue.
Thanks. My question is going to be on out-of-state money versus in-state. I think she has a lot of out-of-state money coming in, helpful for a campaign, but does that mean voters are going to vote for her? I think the answer is no.
Well, you could say the same thing about wonderful Representative Mia Love, right? I mean, where did
That's
that
true.
Money come from?
And
she did get in. So, but moving on, I want to talk about homelessness. I don't want to talk about it, but it's something we need to talk about, because you had the Speaker of the House in the state of Utah call for a homeless czar. And, you know, we could interpret whether that meant that we need a czar that is homeless or a person that is over this homelessness issue.
I'm with the first one.
Okay. Well, I want to go to Lorcan talking about this issue for a minute, because you've got some experience in this in your professional life. How do we approach this issue as a state and solve this issue? And how do we maintain dignity for human beings?
Yes.
Right? So how do we do that? And how do we take the politics out of this? Because for me, this is not a political issue.
No. No, this is absolutely it's a smart governance issue. And in terms of the homeless czar, Greg Hughes, give me a call. I'd love to get appointed. just kidding. That sounds like a terrible idea. But so in terms of, like, how to resolve this homelessness, I think we need to be really smart with our money. And I think that is very much reflected in terms of the healthcare issue. Things like, we need to be investing in our communities to solve this issue. Like, you know, we can talk about how people have freedom to not have a health insurance, but that means that when my folks, I'm a housing case manager, can't afford to go to have any health care and they end up with all this medical debt, it's expensive for them to pay it back, and then they can't pay it back, and then they end up losing their place, which all of this, in terms of that medical debt that they can't pay off, which goes in through bankruptcy, all of that ends up getting moved on to the taxpayer anyway. So I think that we need to be investing in our communities, investing in affordable housing, investing in the incredible nonprofits and the organizations that help them out, the year service things like AmeriCorps and the National Parks Service, which is how I got involved in working with homelessness. I think that we need to be investing, making sure that we've got, like, more beds for drug rehabilitation. We need to have more affordable housing. We need to be having, and I do like, I mean, I'm not speaking on behalf of any organizations here, just myself, but we need to be having more scattered site models, and we need to have them either be close to where work is, or where there's public transit. So, because if we aren't spending this money, we're just taking our hand off the wheel and saying, well, the car is going to drive itself, and that's how you end up in a ditch.
We do have autonomous vehicles coming up. Natalie, what's your thoughts?
So first of all, Lorcan, one of the things you brought up again was healthcare. And can I just say, I get so tired of the left constantly saying it's one or the other.
No.
I am about, like, more free market style of healthcare. Does that also not mean that I can be for helping people that are in need? I am, and I understand that issue. As far as the homeless go, it's interesting. I was reading an article at the end of last year, about how wonderful Utah does to help their homeless population. And all the things that they do and the different and innovative ways that they've tried to do it. Also, I would call the homeless shelters by the Gateway right next to public transportation.
That's real close. Sorry.
Which is some of, you know, those are some of the things that you've asked for. The question is, what do we do about it? It's a very tough issue, not because it's a political issue, but it's one that we all care about. There's people there that have families and children, and they need help. Also, when you have higher crime rates in those areas, and drug issue is also a big issue. I do think we need to learn how to rely more on these nonprofits. They're nonprofit status for a reason. Churches are also nonprofit. I think a lot of those people need to step up and help out, and that a lot of, you know, some tax dollars will be allocated to it. Of course, no, there's no doubt. It's a public issue, but people need to step up and they need to do their part.
So this brings up an interesting point for me. And the reason I said this isn't political is, you know, we are facing an issue in this state, especially in and around downtown, that needs to be solved because it's hurting businesses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And more importantly, it's hurting people. Mm-hmm. It's one of those complex versus complicated problems, right? A complicated issue is build an engine. Once we built the engine, we can keep doing it. A complex problem is something that's, you know, not always solvable in the same way. So how do we use people and companies and nonprofits and the government, and how do we get them to come together and talk? Is there a lack of communication? It seems like people are talking about this, and maybe now that it's boiling over, we're going to see that some positive progress happens. That's the hope. So I want to go to another issue, and that's ballot initiatives. We've got three ballot initiatives coming up. We're talking about redistricting, education funding, and medical cannabis. They are all going to be up on the ballot this year. With these three issues coming up, rather than getting into each of them, I want to ask, you know, why do we have so many ballot initiatives that are so interesting coming up? Is there something happening that our elected officials don't want to respond to? Or is it that people are taking this into their own hands? Do any of these have a chance? And if they do pass, what does that mean for our elected officials? Let's start with you, Natalie.
Okay, so I think I may have a little bit of a different perspective than you two and maybe some other people, but let me tell you where I'm coming from. I like ballot initiatives.
Okay.
And the reason is because I think that the people should be in charge of their government. And I don't think that the government should always be I don't think they should be involved in every issue. And I don't think that our legislators have all the answers. So I love when people get involved and say, this is what we want and this is what we need. And they lobby their neighbors and they lobby people across the state of Utah to pass something that they believe in. I think it speaks a lot to who we are as a people. I think it speaks a lot to us trying to be innovative and fix issues. I also think it gives the people the opportunity to say, I like this or I don't like this. Please don't do it. And they show up at the ballot box. To me, that's powerful. And I'd rather have it that way than a legislator voting on something and being lobbied by businesses and outside groups.
Interesting. Lorcan, thoughts?
Well, I'm glad. I feel like there's a lot of good agreement in this room. We both agree that ballot initiatives are a good thing, but I think that they reflect an issue that's going on with our state legislature, that they are not actually representing what the people want. I mean, there was that earlier question, does public opinion even matter? I mean, legalization for marijuana, which once again is a really big issue in terms of homelessness. We've got an opioid crisis, and things like legalized medical usage of marijuana would greatly impact that issue. So we've got these issues, and I would like to say, you know, increased funding for schools, legalization of marijuana, and redistricting, these are all Democrat issues that our Republican-dominated state legislature is not listening to. So I think that this reflects an issue that we need to be having some motion on.
So that's an interesting thought. But rather than address it, we've got 3 minutes left, and I want to get to gripes, and I also want to ask a question from Liam Wilson, one of our listeners, and he asks, how do you all feel about gerrymandering, right? And are we in a potentially dangerous situation being in a Republican-dominated state? How do we fix that? So I'm going to give you each 30 seconds, and then we're going to gripes. Lorcan, let's start with you. Liam's the questioner.
Okay, so to answer
yeah,
the question.
Yeah, answer about gerrymandering in 30 seconds.
Okay, gerrymandering, we've got a big pizza pie. Everybody's everybody's reaching into Salt Lake County to take a cut out of the Democratic Party, and that's meaning that even though we've got nearly a third of the state are Democrats, we don't even have a single congressional representative, and I think that's not representative of what the people of Utah are and who they want.
Interesting. Natalie?
So I'll first say you did have a Democrat congressional member. They lost, and gerrymandering. You know, every side on this, I've heard it from both Republicans and Democrats. Depends on the state you live in. Everybody's a victim. I get it. I get it. I get it. I hear you. But, you know, at the end of the day, the districts are how they are. And I think if the people of Utah didn't represent them, I think there'd be more public outrage. But quite frankly, like most things, I think that there's a lot of Republicans in this state, and that's how it's going to be, and Democrats are going to feel bad about it.
Well, we're going to see in a few years what happens. I'm going to give you each 45 seconds or so to talk about your gripe. Natalie, you had the last word, so I'm going to give you this word now. What do you just want to gripe about?
Okay, I'm quickly, there was an AC man in my office yesterday, and he, all I heard, I was sitting in my office, he was in one of our other staff members, and I hear him laughing at our office manager, kind of acting like he was the dumb one because our air conditioner unit wasn't working. And he kept on assuring us that it was fine, that the air conditioner unit was fine. And it's like, well, I went over to him and I said, well, why do you think you're here? Like, because it's fine. It's hot in our office. This is a serious to us. And it kind of goes to how I feel about politics. I hate bullies, number one. I also hate people that want to pretend that they, you know, just because you disagree with them, you're somehow stupid. I think that there's a place for everybody and a lot of different thought processes. So that's my gripe of the day.
Darn
bullies.
Hello,
air conditioner man.
Darn bullies. Okay, Lorcan, let's hear it.
Okay, my gripe is Donald Jr.'s letter. I mean, like, so here we've got, it's like confession of collusion. He's handed us the smoking gun. But once again, does public opinion even matter? I really question, is this, if I had a nickel for every time I'd said this is going to be the nail in the coffin, I think I'd have a coffin full of nails. But I think just in terms of like what our representatives are doing and how they're acting or inacting on this, that is my gripe. Come on, guys, we got to stand up to this.
My gripe is that it's just too hot. So you've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Matt Lusty, filling in for Natalie Gochner. I've been joined by Natalie Callahan on the right and Lorcan Murphy on the left. The program is produced by the talented Emily Means. Thanks for listening.